Welcome to Postel's Podcast, where you can learn from our experienced guests and gain new insight on how real estate, your personal security, and living the outdoor lifestyle can strengthen your inner core and bring out the power you need for life. And now here's your host, Mike Postel.
Super stoked today to have a guy on. He's waving right now for those that will be able to see it on my YouTube channel. But for those audio version podcasts, he's waving, smiling, drinking a cup of coffee. But anyways, have Randy King on today, all the way from Alberta, Canada. Always enjoy having like-minded individuals on, especially when it comes to personal security, personal protection, self-defense, preservation of your own life. So I'm a big proponent of that. As some of you may know, I've been involved with various martial arts, 30 years, executive protection, 12 years, and I'm a realtor by my main hustle. So that's what this podcast is about. Randy is an expert involved in regarding your personal safety, security, martial arts. He was a former bouncer, been mixed it up several times, travels all around the world doing educational seminars and speeches on personal security. He's an author, he's written books. I believe he's a father. He's got the whole cadre. So sit back, relax, get something to drink, and let's hear Randy tell a story. So welcome, Randy. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me, Mike. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. So what I enjoy listening to you, it's unique to see someone who is really involved with personal protection, security, martial arts. And I mean this as a compliment, that has the gift of gab. And sure. A lot of guys that I train with are some serious individuals, former top tier one to cops, to SWAT people, to executive protection, to anyways, professional security people and martial artists. And a lot of times those guys and gals are kind of introverted and they are not very expressive. And they definitely kind of look at you a different way, may frown when here I am, Mike Postel, liking to express myself. So we'll talk about that. But you have the uniqueness, you have that personality, that enthusiasm to share with everybody your passion. And I truly appreciate that. It's same with me. So I want to go back a little bit. And so you're from Canada, and I believe you're just north of our Idaho property, which is super cool. But let's talk about being a kid. I want to get into the crux of how this started your passion. So let's start, I guess, as a kid growing up, were there any incidents, issues that kind of, got you into the passion doing martial arts? Where did that all begin?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think I like to tell the joke at my presentations that I have like the standard character build for martial arts instructor, like all of the things you would expect a martial arts instructor to have done, I kind of did, whether on purpose or by accident. So as a kid, absolutely. So I am a heavier fella now, but I was a very obese child. So I have a hypothyroid condition that was undiagnosed. I was 300 pounds at 10 years old. I was like big, big.
Wow.
And even that was the 80s too, right? To date myself, the gray and the beard does that too. But the in the 80s, like that, I was the, like, every school has the fat kid. I was the fat kid. So I was the biggest person pretty much anywhere I went, which that definitely, I think it gave me the ability, the gift of gab you mentioned, I think came from that, because I couldn't defend myself physically. I couldn't chase after people. I didn't have any real muscle mass, but I could be verbally sharp. And I use that as my first defense mechanism. The other interesting thing about me is I grew up very poor. We grew up on social assistance, welfare up here in Canada. And I was the only person in my neighborhood that looked like me. So when it came to bullying, when it came to being an outlier, when it came to target selection, I was kind of ripe for a lot of that, right? It's hard to believe, but I was a quiet or introverted child. I know it's like nobody believes when they see my stuff. But I started off very quiet, very shy. And again, so I grew up in a place where nobody looked like me, which is a factor for like situational awareness and threat assessments. And I was bullied a lot. So I decided to get into martial arts because of, and I wish there was a better reason. Like I wish I had some cool, like, the clouds parted and like Bruce Lee's Tao of Jeet Kune Do was on the ground and I read it. That's not what happened. I saw the Power Rangers TV show and I was like, hey, the Power Rangers don't get bullied. I want to try that stuff. Oh, and man. So that kind of started my martial journey. So if it wasn't for Saban's Power Rangers, we would not be having this conversation right now.
Well, I get the Power Rangers. I don't know what the hell you're talking about as far as the individual name. I never watched them really. But you know what? you hit something on the head. A lot of people will get into martial arts, self-defense. Again, I use self-defense in a certain way, but the hardcore guys I train with, we don't use that term because it makes it sound like you're a receiver. But I'm trained more as a feeder mindset, but we'll get into that as well. But as you say, the general population likes the education aspect more. So we'll talk about that. So I got into martial arts, same kind of reason. I was getting bullied and I got tired of being picked on by two kids every day at school and fighting. And I'm like, I got to learn something to defend myself better. And whatever I'm doing is not, it's not working. And I'm tired of it. And I grew up in the 70s and 80s. I'm probably older than you. So back then we didn't call it bullying. We just fought. And we didn't talk to our parents. We didn't talk to friends. We didn't do any of that because we didn't have anything else back then. We just fought and dealt with it. And we kind of just, you know, tuck it back into our subconscious, cataloged it, and away we went. And then maybe later it would come out. Maybe that's why sometimes I get so angry. But
maybe
it is what it is. So sorry you went through that. That sucks as a father of three boys. Yeah, as a father of three boys, I truly appreciate what you said, though, because my kids have all gone through. I think every kid goes through it. You know, it's just some more than others. So, you know, and some people are seen more as the targets. Anyways, I'll get off my soapbox dish. So you got into martial arts. What did you start training in?
So the city I live in is Edmonton, Alberta, and Edmonton, Alberta has more Taekwondo schools per capita than any other place in North America. So that was the closest thing to my house. So I got into Taekwondo to start. And this is not pooping on Taekwondo, although it did fail me grievously a couple of times. But that's not the system. It's the way they sold the system. And I can get into all that later. But Taekwondo was where I started. And it was really good. I like to pick on traditional martial arts. So sorry, all the traditional martial artists out there. I think traditional martial arts are amazing for everything but actual self-protection. I think they're great for learning how to public speak. They're great for getting in shape. They're great for confidence. They're great for like interaction. The coaching mentality is, in a lot of schools, is that, though. It's these kids are probably never going to fight, but they are going to public speak. They do need to get in shape. They do need to do whatever. So I went to a school like that where it was about tournament and point sparring and getting in shape. And that's where I started losing the weight, was doing martial arts. And it was really great. I really enjoyed it. Taekwondo is definitely the foundation that I started everything with.
Very cool. Hey. We got a ton of that down here in the States as well, and I'm sure around the country. But yeah, that Korean martial art, it's everywhere, and
it works.
There's some good things about it, and there's definitely a few techniques that work self defense wise or aggression wise. But I'm with you on that. I'm all about taking the sport aspect of martial arts out and focus on realistic scenario based training. I don't want to waste anybody's time. Period. So when I'm teaching. Or have taught in the past, and I've taught thousands of people. I have a company called SASDEF, Situational Awareness Self-Defense, and its whole guy's premise is based upon realistic scenario-based training. We have no sport. So go ahead.
Well, and that's awesome. And I don't want anybody who's a traditional martial artist to think that I'm pooping on what you do. The reason why I didn't like it, and the reason why I rally so hard against it is, it's if Taekwondo would have told me that's what I was going to achieve, then I would have been fine. But what they sold me was I was becoming Batman. This was the ultimate martial art. This was for self-protection and confidence. It was like this panacea for all of my problems. And this is one of the biggest soapbox issues that I have, is people misrepresenting what they're doing in order to get people in the seats, right? So I don't think you're wasting your time if you take Taekwondo because you want to go to the Olympics. You're not wasting your time. You are wasting your time if you think that's going to help you in an alley in the rain against two people with knives, right? And that's the issue for me, is the way that people sell their stuff and the client not getting the results they want. So if they wanted real self-defense, awesome. Go train with Mike. That's what you want to do. If you want to learn how to count to 20 in Japanese, maybe they don't need to train with Mike. Maybe they just want to learn cultural stuff. Then go take a Aikido or Kendo. That's totally fine. What bothers me is when people sell something that isn't the result of the program. That really pisses me off because, and I'm sure we'll get into it, I've had traditional martial arts fail me grievously twice in my life. Both times I ended up in the hospital because of BS sales tactics and BS legends that kept me paying them, but actually did not serve me in a real life situation.
Amen. Well said. I'm with you with that. When I was a kid, I did karate, and some wrestler got a hold of me, pounded me to the ground. I'm like, what the fudge?
Right, are you exactly. kidding?
I wasn't taught how to defend that. What the F? You know, so Hapkido has a little bit of, you know, grappling involved with it, but I've sparred with Hapkido guys. I'm a black belt, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, no big deal. And I have stand-up skills.
That's actually
a
huge deal. Good for you.
I did a lot. Anyways, the guy got frustrated with me because I could counter him because I had stand-up skills because he thought I was just a grappler. So he thought he could take me out stand-up. And then what grappling little he had, anyways, didn't work well for him. So he was shocked. And I get you, bro. You see that look in somebody's eyes where their eyes just light up. They're huge saucers. And they're like, oh, crap, the stuff I was taught is not working. And that's a very bad time to find out all that time and money and effort that you spent thinking you're taking care of yourself on a security standpoint just got thrown out the window. And some dude just de-bagged you big time. So totally agree with you that. So sorry that you learned the hard way. So you found out Taekwondo wasn't doing it for you. Where'd you go after that? What did you look into going, crap, I got to find something better?
So my career is literally built off of, oh crap, that didn't work. What next? So I started off, got a black belt in Taekwondo, got in my first bar fight, got just destroyed by an old man. I say old man because he was old in the story. He's probably my age now, but an old, out of shape man. So a guy like me beat the crap out of a young version of me. And I didn't think that was supposed to happen because when you're training fighters, when you're training people for sport, there is no purpose in giving them doubt. Does that make sense? Like if I'm training you to go win something, I don't want to put doubt in your head. You're not going to win. So that's where the street stuff and the sport stuff to me really diverge is with sport. You're trained, you're an invincible killing machine. You're going to win all the trophies. With the street stuff or the self-defense stuff, you're more like, there's a lot of other factors and you might get hurt, so maybe pay more attention. So after Taekwondo failed me, I got into Muay Thai and submission wrestling.
Nice.
That was really cool. I'm a striker by nature. Like I always say that BJJ is eating my vegetables. Like I know I should do it, but I don't want to. Because I'm such a striker by nature and I'm not a big physical toucher. If you follow my stuff, there's like jokes about me and hugs. I'm not a big hugger.
Oh, and just to interject, for our listeners, I've been following Randy and I know what his deal is, but obviously for those listening probably haven't. So I'm giving them those softball questions. So please continue.
Right. Yeah, these are easy. I love them. So, So I went into submission grappling, submission wrestling, not submission grappling, because we were mostly standing up. There was less groundwork. And Thai boxing. And then a couple years later, I got stabbed. So I've been stabbed a couple of times. My joke is 2.5. Once in the mouth by a knife, once in the leg by a knife, and then once in my arm by a fork. That's my little joke. But the marketing guy in me wants to say I've been stabbed 6 times, counting each prong. You know, it sounds more bad.
sounds better.
Yeah. Anyway, so I got stabbed in a very very ridiculous situation by a person who, if it was a tale of the tape, I should have beat no problem. So then I went into Filipino martial arts. I spent a lot of time in Filipino martial arts and Krav Maga. So that was like the next stage because, you know, this 165-pound human almost ended my life on a Wednesday night when I'd been training martial arts my whole life, right? So this is where like the traditional thought processes started failing me. And so I just kept trying other stuff. So now I'm more of a jack of all trades. I box. I do some BJJ twice a week is the goal, maybe once a week. I do a lot of FMA stuff still. I work a lot of knife stuff and stick stuff. Just trying to be a generalist is my goal, right? Is I want to be good enough in every kind of theater of combat that I might get into on the ground, standing up, maybe a weapon, maybe driving, etc. I want to get good enough in all those areas that I can get out of that situation with my life staying as whole as possible. So I'm not trying to like gain black belts anymore. That's out of my wheelhouse, although it'd be cool to have. The goal right now is how can I function in this environment if things went wrong?
Very good. Sorry about the pointy things, the stabs. That's jabs. That's And just so you know, my background, I've been doing Filipino martial arts for 22 years. I focus with Sayat Kali. I have a little bit of experience with Atienza Kali as well. But my coach I've been with, Guru Trav, thanks, brother. I'll leave it at that because he's a private person. But insane coach. And yes, Filipino combatives are amazing. And
I love them.
The problem is you found out the rough way that some guy smaller than you that you thought you could handle had an equalizer and took you out of the fight because you got involved with a realistic scenario situation. And so,
exactly. And like, there are so many failures in that story for me on the soft skills and the hard skill side, or the proactive and the reactive side, is like, I had assumed compliance back at that point when I got stabbed. That was kind of a big deal in my community, or at least in my head. And people stopped messing with me. They listened to me all the time. So I told that guy, no, he didn't get the memo that I'm like Randy King, cool bouncer guy. He was like, this dude's in the way. And so I had ego problems, assumed compliance problems. I wasn't paying attention like I should have. And that's, I think, why my focus really went to soft skills. And that's where most of my stuff is. I moniker myself as an education-based self-defense instructor. And the reason why is, like, there's just so many times in my life and in talking to clients that if they would have had proactive precursory skills before a physical engagement, they most likely could have avoided it. Our company's called 80-20 Conflict Management Strategies. And the reason why we call it that is it's 80% education and 20% OS or oh shit techniques if things go bad, right? Because from what I've seen and the people that I work with, and I have a very large demographic to pull from. I work with so many different types of people. It's insane. That has been like tried and true, the way that we can get the biggest bang for the person's buck in training them in the limited amount of time I have as a seminar-based coach.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. With you 100%. That's my same attitude. Fortunately, you learned the hard way, but I guess it was, as I said, it was meant to be, and you learned a lot from it, and you're able then to give back to people downloads that they're paying for, or in some cases, sometimes free reps of what your experiences in life, which are very valuable. And you can't even really quantify that or measure it to a degree, because it's so valuable to hear that from somebody to part with their experience to you. And so I really appreciate what you said. And the reason why I ask you these questions, coming from a martial artist and a martial artist, is a lot of times that the people you're teaching or the general public out there doesn't truly understand your background or where you came from, what your intent, what your purpose is, what your willingness is, all that stuff. And for you to have that background, people need to hear that. So for those that, and I'll give you an example why. So if people don't know you or don't know your deal and come across as ignorant, or let's say your peers in the martial art world going, who is this Randy guy that's all about education and only a little bit about self-defense and the physicality? What a piece of shit, you know? And I've dealt with that my whole life. Or, oh, you look a certain way, or you act a certain way, or you talk too much. You know, you're not hardcore enough. I've heard all that crap, right? So, and I've been in fights just because of the way I look at times. So it is what it is. So, but I believe they were all building blocks to get you to a certain point where then you can give back, and you're doing a wonderful job giving back and teaching people what's up. I truly am down with what you're saying, the 80% factor. So let's get into why the 80%, and I'm going to break it down because I've heard you speak before, but you talk about the physical, the verbal, the emotional aspects, which people should be aware of before maybe they undertake some sort of self-defense or martial arts system, or certain type of martial arts that may be a collection of techniques that aren't truly a system, but you can learn certain things. That's getting kind of deep. But I firmly believe you really need to know about your nonverbal and verbal communication skills. Your situational awareness is first and foremost, eyes and ears, and your five senses, taste, touch, smell, look, pay attention, you know? So you need to be, obviously, these are all things that you use to potentially avoid a confrontation. And that's what we're truly trying to do. So let's talk about your attitude towards that on the 80%, if I'm making sense.
Sure. So I think like where people bump heads on this thing is the term self-defense, because it's such a loosely worded term. Technically, it's a legal term, right? And then it's been co-opted for marketing. That's what we use it for. Right. So. And I also have co-opted it for marketing. That's what we do. It's trying to give the client what they're looking for. What's that?
Same here. Sorry.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. Right. So understanding that, then we need to know what your definition of self-defense is. And I think this is what stops a lot of the arguments on the internet that I try to avoid, because if you're trying to teach conflict communication and you're trying to convert people on Facebook, you're not really practicing conflict communication, in my experience. So when we're looking at what self-defense is, you need to know what your definition of self-defense is. And so some people's definition is when the fight starts, right? So then you protect yourself, you defend yourself, whatever, right? Whatever moniker you want. To me, self-defense initially begins with, in my educational process, at the selection point. Why you were selected to be the potential target. Now, whether this is social or asocial violence or predatory or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's why was I chosen, right? Why out of all of the fish, why was the hook coming at me? Mm-hmm. So why I think education is so important is if you can just take yourself off of the radar of the potential target selection, that's going to do so much more than it is to learn physical skills in an asymmetrical situation, being it's not even. Most self-defense isn't even. It's not same weight class, right? They have force multipliers. They have multiple opponents. They have size, strength, age, whatever, extracurricular chemicals in their system. Why would I try to deal with that situation when I could just not be the person ideally that's picked, right? So why I think education is so important is I'm a research nerd. I read everything I possibly can on the subject. I've done courses. I went through Emory University's course, Understanding Violence, which was very interesting. Anything I get my hands on the topic, I read. And my brain is a pattern recognition machine, like all brains are. So I noticed that the people that are getting selected most of the time for predatory or asocial violence, and that's resource-based, they're trying to gain something from you. This isn't about hierarchy or status. They need something. Were people almost always with weak social connections and weak boundaries. So predators are going to choose somebody that doesn't have, like, let's not get too icky about it, but if somebody's going to select a child to harm, they're not selecting the popular child that's talking to everybody whose parents pick them up on time every day. There's too much risk in that. They're going to pick the one who doesn't have any body autonomy, who, you know, maybe their parents don't show up all the time. They don't have a communication point. They don't have that touchstone. So that is huge because that's going to, if you have those two things, strong boundaries, good, healthy social structure, you're taken off of most radars almost instantaneously, which is important. Then we still have to look at why was I chosen. Now, I'm a nerd, so I like to use the Jean-Luc Picard quote here, which is, you can make no mistakes and still lose. You can do everything correctly and still be selected by a bad guy. That can still happen.
So, absolutely.
While we're doing the educational stuff, I never want anybody to feel like we're trying to victim blame or to put any issues on other people. And in my opinion, victim blaming is blaming after the crime, not warning of a potential crime. You're not victim blaming if you're saying these are the numbers. You're victim blaming if you're like, you did this wrong, right? So when we're looking at the educational side of things, we need to know, like, you know, where are you going? What are you doing? What attention are you drawing? And all of these things help. And if we go to the social side of things, it's identical. If you walk into a bar and you're wearing like gold chains, you have like a UFC shirt on, you're like, you're walking like you have ILS, invisible lat syndrome, like you're going to be selected by people looking to build a rep. So being aware of where the bad things happen, how to get out of bad situations, exits, et cetera, how to read body language and threat assessment, and how to communicate to de-escalate, all of these, not only are they more effective self-defense tools than getting into a fight, they're also just life skills. And in my opinion, good self-defense training should be good life skills training. Taking Rory Miller's conflict communications course, I've taken it, I've certified in it now, but I've taken it 18 times. We were just on the road recently, so like maybe 20 times. And every time I hear it, I get something out of it that will help my life. That's what good self-defense training is. It's making your whole life better, not just worrying about the stranger danger, person in the alley, etc.
Bingo. Absolutely agree with you 100%. So you could like categorize everything you just said in this different little subcategories and then focus on every single one, how to do that. And you just made that perfectly smooth and combined it all together. So that was good. So I appreciate that. And that goes into, like, I have clients that are in New York City. I have a son who's in New York City. And I first thing I tell him is, do not look like an ATM machine.
Right.
I don't care. Even before all the crime issues that are happening in the city now, it's kind of gone back to the 1970s, but, and they're having problems there big time, but, and that's a whole other discussion, but you don't want to look like an ATM machine, and you're right. You'll get selected if you are. And if you look weak, sure. And even if you are that popular, strong kid. Maybe you're walking by the street someday, you know, coming back from practice or from the park, and some car pulls up alongside and you goes, "Hey, want to see my puppy?" I actually got asked that as a kid. Okay. So I was a very athletic. A friend of mine did. I got chased. I got dropped off on a corner a mile away from my house at night from a dad and his kid that from football practice. And I was in Pop Warner football. I was a little kid and I'm carrying a big orange bag of football gear. Do I look like a target or what? Right.
Right. Yeah.
So about halfway through my walk, I notice, thank God I had some SA going, but I notice on the back of my corner, this freaking car's trailing me. And I'm like, how do you, you know, sometimes you just have it in your system. So
yeah,
I had the wherewithal as a little kid. I kept looking back. I'm like, I was really a little kid. I'm not saying mother effer, but I'm like, mother effer, this car is tracking me. It's following me. So I started walking faster to test it. Kept following me. Made a right turn or a left turn onto my main street. Kept following me. Then it sped up a little, get closer to me. I'm like, oh my God. So then I started running.
Right.
And I'm carrying a big bag, helmet, shoulder pads, you know, like you guys play hockey a lot up there, you know, carrying all your gear. I'm carrying, that's stereotyping, sorry. But anyways, I'm carrying all my gear. And I said, okay, mother effer, I'm the kind of guy, like if you challenge me, if stuff like that happens, then I'm like, yeah, I look at it as a game. I'm like, okay, motherfucker, whoop, pardon my language sweat, but we're X-rated. I'm like, okay, let's go. And I got kind of like, all right, let's go, as a little kid. And so I ran through a couple areas, and then I literally hopped. We were living on 2 acres. I hopped the exterior perimeter fence, or I threw the bag over first, then hopped over the fence, ran, and then got away. And I heard the car, and I'm hiding behind a bunch of trees, and I see the car circle, kind of like a shark looking for predatory. And then it took off. And that validated all my suspicions, all my reactions were correct. And thank God I acted on those. But that piece of crap was trying to get me as his fun time.
Absolutely.
And so, like, you bring that up. Sorry to babble. This is about you, but child predator, short-eyed mother effers are, I can't stand that. Kids and animals get me. I could see gnarly stuff, be okay with it and go, well, that sucks. When it involves kids or for some reason animals, then it gets me. So you mentioned about observation, situational awareness, the nonverbal, verbal communications, all that stuff. Everything you were talking about, you can learn a lot by watching animals.
Yeah.
So really good, Randy, that you have all that education background. I'm sure you've probably observed animals. I learned that when I started my day back in jiu-jitsu, and Hoist Gracie says, Mike, watch animals.
Right.
Watch what they do. Watch how they interact. Watch the mass attack, meaning multiple attackers on one thing, and they're always going for their weaker subject. So it's interesting when you can get paired up with someone that knows more than you, and I always enjoy that. So I want to touch upon, you did talk about your boundaries, which is great. I call them gaps or space, you know, your space, your distance. I call gaps. I like to keep at least a 3-gap beat away from me. So that means the person can't grab my hair or clothing. The person can't strike me, whether it's knees, feet, you know, legs, shins, elbows, hands, whatever. They just can't touch me. And I keep my distance and engage. So let's talk about, you're hitting upon emotional and psychological aspects.
Yeah.
And you touched upon the brain, which I really want to focus on briefly here, is as we grow up, we're conditioned based upon the way we were raised, the way we were taught things, the way we see things. And then for good or bad, as we're older and adults, we react or do certain things based upon that conditioning. And at times we need to learn to recognize, hey, that's actually completely incorrect. I need to adjust that right now, big time. So why don't you touch upon, because you do a good job about dealing with verbal judo, the aspects and the emotional side of things, which a lot of martial artists do not touch upon.
I agree. And I don't think a lot of martial artists need to touch upon it unless, again, they are teaching specifically self-defense, right? So let's use the boundaries example we were just talking about. So I have a boundary setting course on Teachable, blah, promotion. And we cover boundaries in 6 different areas, right? So you mentioned physical. right? This is the distance I want to keep, et cetera, et cetera. But we expand it to time, intellectual, psychological, sexual, and material, like all these different things, right? So we have to understand that while there is a cultural belief, this old samurai belief, this like, you're going to be cool and calm and collected, and there's going to be no emotional engagement in a fight or a bad situation. Because it doesn't always have to be a fight. It could be your boss intimidating you, right? Like, violence isn't just, in my definition, violence isn't just physical. It's intimidation, it's deprivation, it's you know, not giving your child proper food is would be doing violence to that kid in a general sense, right? So anything that's going to impede that person's ability to grow, if you are directly affecting them, that's kind of the thought process we use. So when it comes to the psychological side of things, you need to understand, like, you might potentially freeze. And even if you have the best training in the world, your freeze might be hard to deal with. And I did a lot of work on freeze. And I use a different freeze model than a lot of other coaches use. We use a 3-beat freeze model. And I think to understand kind of my thought process on self-defense is you need to remember that almost every single self-defense book on the planet that is a bestseller or you're going to get access to has been written by a very specific type of individual. It's almost always white men, almost always. And it's almost always white men with a very deep sense of training. They've been training their whole lives. They're police, military, etc., right? If your training is good, you forget the things you had to go through to begin with. And if your training is good, it deals with 90% of the most common things that happen in violence. If you are a civilian looking to do this and you don't have that high level of training, there are going to be things that affect you that won't be written in books by experts who have been in a ton of violent situations. Does that make sense?
Yep, sure.
Okay. So, yes. And I'm not crapping on the books. You need to read them. They're very important information. So, freeze model. I was talking to a psychologist at Harvard. He was a teacher there. He wrote an article on sexual assault and freezing, and I highly recommend it. I'll send the link if you want to put it in show notes or whatever. And he talked about 3 levels of freeze, and I'd never heard of a 3rd level of freeze, a very deep freeze that doesn't happen because, again, I've been training martial arts since I was 10. I hadn't experienced deep freeze. So this is just one example of the what you need to know psychologically. So there's 3 types of freezes that people experience when it comes to cognitive freezes. We're not talking about physical freeze or anything like that. And we're not talking about trauma right now. That's a whole separate thing. There's a trauma training dynamic we can talk about later. So freeze number 1 is what we call a discriminatory freeze. That's like you go boo, you stop, you assess the area, and then you're done freezing, right? It's a quick couple second freeze. We've all experienced that. Freeze number 2 is what's called the shocked freeze. A shocked freeze is something happened to you, but in a way you didn't expect it to happen. So you had training in that area, but it was slightly different. So my example for that is the first time I got punched with rings, that was a much different experience than getting punched by a glove. So when I got punched by rings, I froze for a second. I needed a minute to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. My brain knows what a punch is. That wasn't what I cataloged as a punch. Do I need to change my tactics? So that's your general freeze, right? So that's your shock freeze. That's where most instructors stop talking about freezes because that's the only freeze they've experienced. But again, with the demographics that I work with a lot of people who have gone through some pretty traumatic experiences. Now, I am not a psychologist or a counselor. I just happen to end up with clients that have trauma. And I definitely do not think that self-defense is all they need. We have to move them on to a counselor that I trust or a therapist that I trust. But if you have never experienced something or something happens so out of left field that you cannot conceive it, you go into what's called an overwhelmed freeze. And an overwhelmed freeze could last the entire encounter. So you'll hear when I talk about this, especially I'm talking in mixed groups of people that don't have fight backgrounds. Generically, if you have 30 people in a room, a couple of them have experienced sexual assault in their life. So I will say this model, blah, 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 and then I say overwhelm. Overwhelm freezes, your brain is overwhelmed. You have no good options. You can't get out of the area. So you just stay frozen the whole time. The amount of people that have come to me after classes and be like, oh my God, nobody said that. That happened to me. I thought I was lesser than, weaker than, whatever. I'm like, no, if your brain has no touch point to something, you can't do anything about it. because your brain needs the process. So the example I use is when my daughter was five, she loved My Little Pony so much that when she came to visit me, she would quiz me on the main characters from My Little Pony. That was her move. Like, Dad, name all five ponies. So my daughter, 5 years old, if she was walking and a baby unicorn jumped into her arms, she would have a response pattern because she's visualized this happening. So she would pet it, be happy, etc. If I was walking and a baby unicorn jumped into my arms, I would freeze. Because I'm like, oh my God, unicorns are real. What is going on? Did I take drugs? Like, what is happening in this situation, right? So people need to understand the brain does get overwhelmed. And you right. can be in a situation so grievous that your brain just doesn't have a touch point. And sometimes through our evolution, the best reaction was to do nothing in order to survive. So that's where we use the saying, you can't survive wrong. If you tell me a story of a place you survived violence and you're telling me the story, you didn't do anything wrong. Could we optimize it? Maybe. Could we change it? Possibly. But don't get in your head you did something wrong. Your body might have just shut you down.
Very good. There are cases. And just so you know, I've been taught by Dr. Park Dietz. He's the number one world-renowned forensic psychiatrist
cool.
in the world. He and Gavin DeBecker back in the day created workplace violence. Park was the genius. Gavin was the brilliant marketer. And then right. they went their separate ways. He created the definition of a stalker. Anyways, oh. this is my father-in-law. And so I've been, you would love this, Randy. So I've been exposed to a lot of cases. So he does a lot of court testifying, and then there's workplace violence cases for big time companies around the world. And, right. Anyways, I worked there for a while, and I got experience taking intake calls with workplace violence issues. But in any event, he's told me certain cases where the victim was so into that brain freeze that you're discussing that most people don't discuss, that they literally take themselves to another place or another part of the world while they're being victimized.
Right.
And they literally shut down everything. And it's literally, they're having a like out of body experience. And that's something entirely hold level of different scenarios. So you're touching upon things, Randy, that are really good. People need to be aware of that. And mm-hmm. you bring up the point about being punched. One of the things I ask people and some of the guys I train with will ask people, hey, this is no disrespect, but have you ever been punched?
Right.
You ever been hit? You ever been choked out? You ever been knocked out? And it's okay to say no. Hopefully most of you do say no. I've been the receiver of all of them. I've been knocked out, choked out, punched, broken bones, torn cartilage, mm-hmm. chipped teeth, all that stuff. It is what it is. I asked for it in a way, and because I was my fighting or martial art training.
Right.
So it is what it is, but you can learn a lot from that. So I appreciate you bringing that up because you're for those that haven't experienced that, it's so crucial to have your brain switch in a nanosecond. I call it a New York second. How fast you got to move in your brain to then make your body move, right?
Right.
Or if you're dealing with verbal judo, or you take that angle on that person that just punched you with rings and you're like, holy crap, what the hell was that? But then you shook it off and maybe took an angle and dealt with the person. So, yeah, I hear you. So so when you were young, I believe you started bouncing when you were 19. Was that?
Yes, 19. Legal drinking age in Alberta is 18. I worked at Wendy's for a couple of days. And I was like, nope. And then
would you like a frosty and a punch? Exactly.
Did not like that. And that was the thing, right? I had in my head, I was just like ultimate fighter. Right. I had a bunch of Taekwondo trophies. And I was like, oh, there's a job open at a bar. And the job opening was because a guy was stabbed a bunch of times. And then funnily, I get stabbed in the same bar. But I went there, was like, look, this is the job for me. I have I don't have really bad. I have high functioning ADHD, I guess is the way to say it. So if I'm doing something I don't enjoy, I'm not going to do it. So when I went to bounce, it was the perfect job for a person like me. High energy, right? Little bit of gift of the gab. So I worked the front door. I got to, you know, get into fights, which was pretty fun. I got to feel like a rock star because of club courtesy at other bars. And I got to talk to girls all the time. It was like the ultimate 19-year-old job for me. And then I did that for a while, and I didn't get good at it till I was in my definition of good, probably till I was 24. Like the 18 to 24, Randy was more of a thug goon, chip on the shoulder kind of guy, right? Like I would fight everybody. That's how I was trained when I first started, was fight everybody. And then at about 24, I was like, this is dumb. I can walk people out. I can talk people out. So I do trainings for security staff, bouncers, and door staff all around the world. Big, big deal. And one of my things is, if you can't talk a drunk out of a bar, like you got the wrong job. Like if you have to fight every single person that's had too much to drink, you're not good at this. And I think that's, again, but it goes towards my it took me a long time to learn this, but it goes towards my, you know, most of this stuff can be handled without physical skills. Most of it, not all of it. I can't stress that enough because people seem to think I'm saying read a book and you'll be safe. I'm not. You got to get on the mat. You got to sweat. You got to feel a choke out, know what a gray out is, know where your limits are on your joints, get punched in the stomach and realize you're not as tough as you think you are. Right? Like we need that. That's necessity. But I feel it's over prioritized in the self-defense field. Like that's all you need to know. And you can avoid so much stuff. And that should be the goal for self-defense. The goal for self-defense, in my opinion, should be it affects your life as little as possible. Right? So somebody pulls up in front of you, you're road raging. If you can make them like walk away, even if you have to eat some crow, that's better than them pulling a bat. You have to go to your insurance company. You might be injured to take days off of work. Right? So to me, self-defense is creating the most frictionless experience possible. That only can be done through learning how to read threats, evade, escape, learn how to de-escalate, all that stuff. And again, it can fail, and it does fail. But it fails way less than the Krav Maga guy down the street is telling you it does. And I think that's the most important thing is you're going to use soft skills, proactive skills, way more in your life than you're going to use physical skills, I hope. Right? So and if you are using physical skills more, I'm not the coach for you. You go somewhere else. You're not going to like me at all. But most of us have 9-to-5 jobs. Most of us work. We have kids. We have soccer mats. Like, you can't Krav Maga throat pop the ref at your kid's soccer game because you don't like a call, right? You need to have these other skills, and they're going to enrich your life so much more. Like, we're moving into more online programming. So I have two online programs, the Boundary Setting one and Realities of Violence. Realities of Violence has changed so many instructors' opinion on self-defense and just the amount of feedback we got from the way I laid it out, because there's no physical techniques in the 6-hour program, nothing. It's all education, this, that, this is how this works. It's my thoughts, understanding these things. And the amount of people we talk to after the fact, like when I go teach, so I teach a lot with the First Nations here, you guys would call them Native Americans. When I teach there, they all think I'm going to go up there and like teach them how to like break boards and kick nuts. And I'm like, no, like that's good for your confidence, but this isn't aggression training. This isn't assertiveness training. This is awareness training. So we teach them some quick stuff to keep it fun. But the emails that I get are all like, oh, I use that thing you showed me. Like, oh, cool. That like cool takedown. No, I use that like calm myself down thing and I stop the fight. Good. That is frictionless. That's the goal for self-defense, in my opinion.
Perfect. The majority of the population, that's what they're looking for, is how to properly de-escalate a situation, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? You can't keep fighting your way out of things, because I don't care how much of a badass you think you are, or maybe the neighborhood thinks you are. Sure. Someone eventually is going to show up and beat the crap out of you. Someone's eventually going to show up with a pack and be a bunch of wolves and tear you apart. Someone's going to show up like they did, you mentioned, with an equalizer, stick you, stab you. And then you're like, what the F? And so the more people could de-escalate things, the better this world would be. So you're going to have a very short career being a badass if you do not know how to de-escalate things. And yes, that's the way to go with things. Situational awareness, use your de-escalation skills. And hey, famous guy from Toronto, Canada, defer, defend.
Right.
And that's, oh my God, I'm spacing out his name.
Blauer?
He was the first mark. What's it?
Blauer?
Go ahead.
Tony Blauer.
Thank you. Tony Blauer. So he's like the one martial artist that really started getting into the mindset and how to deal with your fear, to overcome your fear.
Yeah.
And so he did a really good, he's known for that. And that really resonated. And thankfully, my coach introduced me to that. And
That's cool.
it got me into really, this is like, my God, this is like, holy crap, 20 years ago. And right. it got me into, yeah, I can't just be this guy that wants to kick someone's ass. I got it. There are, I'm nobody. There's billions of people better than me. I got to learn how to de-escalate. And
right.
so touching upon that, you mentioned about certain keywords.
Yeah.
Sorry, you want to mention something?
Oh yeah, I just want to say, like, so yes, I agree that eventually get taken down. That was my experience as a bouncer, right? When I say my bounce career is like a video game. When I first started bouncing, I was fighting a lot, but the fights were easy. Then when I got tougher, only tougher people fought me. But I think the other thing we need to talk about, which people don't talk about when it comes to self-defense, is not only is being Billy Badass your whole life bad for you, it's bad for your community. Because then you're that guy that can't go to certain parties. Your kids start getting embarrassed you exist. Oh, we can't bring my dad to this because of whatever. I think we don't put enough onus on... We're social creatures and we don't put enough onus on it. Martial artists have like this Ronin, I'm by myself, self-contained universe thing. But when I was 20, getting a black eye was cool. I'm 40. It's not cute anymore, right? It's not like, oh, Randy's just, you know, sowing his wild oats. I have a 13-year-old kid. If I'm picking fights in a parking lot, what am I showing them, right? So not right. only is it you, your safety, it's what am I patterning for other people? Do I want to be the guy like, oh, we're going to invite Randy to the party, but, you know, he gets drunk and punches people. He's 50 now. Like, it's just not a good look. We have to evolve.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a guy in our neighborhood that's like that, and everyone right. thinks he's a piece of shit, to be blunt.
Yeah, exactly.
You look, life interjects training modifiers, and it's how you adapt to those modifiers, and you better adapt to those. So, for example, you mentioned you had a daughter.
Yep.
I have three kids. That your kids look up to you as a king or queen for your parents, right? And I would try to do everything best to provide the best for my kids. And so you're right. You can't be driving and then someone cuts you off blatantly, almost causes an accident, and then they stick their finger out and flip you off. My old school attitude is, let's go.
Yeah.
That person did that one symbol or said that one word that set me off that I can't stand. I'm going after that mother effer. Well, you have to then gear down, big shifter, and go, No, I have to go against the way I was raised and say, it's okay. That person's a douchebag. He may be some bro I might be sharing a beer with down the road and maybe a really cool guy. Maybe we're both having a bad day. Our cups are full. And we're both teed off about everything and we're not handling it properly.
Right.
So, but you learn that with age and time. But for you, Randy, I've actually learned maybe the hard way. And that's why I do inform certain things as part of this podcast is to bring experts like you on so people can listen to your story and hear what you have to offer. So then they can go to you and learn to help avoid maybe stuff I did that I didn't handle well properly back in the day. Now I learned from it, became a better person.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point of having this podcast and guys and gals like you on. Sorry, I don't deal with 64 different creations of humans. So guys and gals that are on,
yeah.
Because I want people to learn and get around all those curveballs and obstacles and learn faster to deal with things better and don't want to go through some of the heartache I went through. But absolutely, 100% agree with you big time. So what's nice is you say up front what you're all about, what you want to achieve with people, what you want to teach them.
Yeah.
And that's perfect. You have to lay out a premise and what's your purpose? What's your intent?
So.
Otherwise, why are you teaching? Right? So I like how you do that. And it doesn't cause any confusion or cloud any issues where then someone's halfway through your course and going, wait a minute, this dickhead's not showing me how to throw a proper hook or stuff a takedown or how to defend a Monteleone rear naked choke. Seriously? Come on. So, or how to parry and then strike when you got blades in front of you and here's the other thing down here in I'm in California, but down here in the United States, a lot of people packing heat, a lot of serious tools. So, got to be really careful what you're doing out there. So what you're doing, Randy, is awesome. It covers a lot of things that, you know, and like you said, if you want to go learn how to get physical with the 20% aspect that you say, here's some people you can go check out and go and do it. There you go.
Exactly.
But that's good job. Go ahead.
That's the goal for me. My goal is I want to be the gateway drug for martial arts. That's my position. So I want you to come like train with me. Like this might be hubris. But I really believe if you spend 6 to 10 hours with me, you can take any martial art and then make it a self-defense program if you wanted to. I train with as many people as I can, sport-based, traditional-based, combatives-based, whatever their moniker is. And I can learn from them because I know exactly what my mission statement is. My mission statement is, I want to be this person affected this way. So if I'm learning something that I don't think is effective, I'll still learn it, but I'll be like, okay, cool, let's go through this. And then I can find the thing that I like, if that makes sense. So I think, If you are teaching self-defense and that's on your branding and it's in your thing and you're not teaching proactive skills or soft skills, you're not teaching self-defense, in my opinion. Who cares what I think? So honestly, there's just so many other things you need to add. And also your messaging has to stay the same. So I've heard people talk about escape. For example, I was at a seminar. I was learning. And the guy's like, he was paying lip service to escape. I don't know if he's paying lip service to escape because I was in the room. And I don't know, because it was really clunky. He's like, oh, yeah, and don't forget, you can always escape. Now, for the next 20 minutes, we're going to lock you in the cage and you're going to do some rounds. I'm like, so what you just said and then what you made us do were very different things. I'm not saying either's incorrect. I'm saying your messaging is off base. We should have done escape is important. Let's work some escape drills. Now, tell the clients we're no longer working escape. Lock them in the cage. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. You, again, that goes back to your, like you said, I failed to say the proper words, but your mission statement.
Yes.
And then what is your, what are your true intentions? And you have to be upfront what your goals are for those people. And everybody's, like you mentioned, and I've always said this, everybody's uniquely different. And so what's right for you, Randy, may not work for me and vice versa, an XYZ person. So we're all individual creatures that have different issues in life and experiences. Some may be similar in aspects, but we all have to tailor make our self-defense system based upon our own personal individual lifestyle. And again, it goes into, and you could be doing, you could spend a whole day on just family tactics in your house, or you mentioned vehicles at the beginning. We have vehicle tactics. So there's whole different things. You talked about self-defense and that's completely fine. Now, if you want to be, like I mentioned earlier, a feeder and a dominator, and you want to go completely vertical in your training, well, you can go completely vertical, but now you're killing people and you don't have any more training partners. So I learned a lot from you, if anyone's out there, again, Syed Kali, Tuhan Tom Kyer is one of the foremost insane, gnarly guys out there, professional trainer, especially with the real warriors. But he's one of the heads of Syed Kali. And that gentleman, he was like you, a bouncer back in the day, been involved with a lot of stuff. Has a family, great guy, but trained all the real deal warriors out there in the U.S. And again, phenomenal teacher in the PsyOx system, but he's taught us, me as well, especially everything you just said about all that. And you look, we can get as vertical as you want, but what's going on in your life? What's keeping you up at night, as my Guru Travis says, and what's bothering you? And let's focus on that. And then you look, they also do this gnarly thing where they throw guys into a pit with wild boars and you have a blade. Jeez.
Yeah.
And it's you or the boar. It's gnarly.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
But they're told up front, if you want to do this, here's what's going to happen. Here's what you're going to encounter. And there's a chance you're going to die.
Yeah.
Or you're going to be severely maimed. And that, unfortunately, has happened to some people.
Sure.
So as far as, at least, I don't know about death, but severely maimed. I mean, one dude had to have his leg amputated.
Fuck.
The boar infected his leg and it was gnarly. But, and there's been times where the guy couldn't handle it and then the other guys had to jump in and kill it. So Atien Zakala, Syed Kali, they do that gnarly stuff, or at least they did in the past. If any of you are listening, please correct me if I'm wrong on a sidebar note. I agree with you 100%. So absolutely. Hey, communication.
Yeah.
You have to communicate. Yeah. It's not all about me putting a fist through your chest. So exactly. Absolutely. I'm with you 100%. So before I cut you loose.
Sure.
Is there anything I have not asked you? I mean, you and I sit here could talk all day long. I mean, you and I should hook up. If you're in the States, we need to meet and we could literally bro down all day.
Sounds good.
Due to this episode, it can't be a Joe Rogan 3-hour episode. So is there something you would like to say that I have not asked you or you'd like to touch upon?
So you were going to ask a question and I interrupted you. So let's get that question out. You were talking about jump words. You were going to ask that. And then
I went on
a tangent. So why don't you ask that question? Because it's an important one. And then we can go from there.
Right. So going back to the way you were raised and your mindset, right? Yeah. Yep. So personally, you should always evolve with your mindset and your beliefs and improve upon those. You can't be stuck, like you said, as that 19 through 24 year old bouncer. You have to evolve and grow. You don't evolve, you don't adapt, you die. That's just common sense. So you mentioned there's key words that though may trigger you.
Yes.
Which may, unfortunately, you may act a certain way, even as a more mature person with your kids, that then sheds upon a shadow on you, makes you look bad. So how do you teach people to handle with those certain, like there's certain key words for me, even to this day, where I'm like, ooh, and I got to take a deep breath. I swallow my pride, drive home, and then I'll beat the crap out of Bob, my dummy, or go to the academy and start just wailing. But I'll be like driving home going, oh my God. And you're like, you're white knuckling that your steering wheel going that.
Right.
But you know, just, hey, for those that don't understand what the hell we're talking about, sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
So I think jump words are important. So I had one, we were talking about it before the show. I think what I would like the listeners to understand is you're going to have one of three things happen in a encounter, whether it's verbal or physical. You're either going to perform to your expectation, you're going to overperform or underperform. These are all important things. Overperforming is as bad as underperforming. So example of overperforming is you trained mixed martial arts, only mixed martial arts. Your conditioning is you only stop when the ref stops you. Okay. You get into a street fight, and you start pounding the guy, and your conditioning is only stop when the ref stops you, and you keep, that would be overperforming. You can underperform and lose the situation, or you can perform within the respects of the context of it. Jump words tend to create an overperformance window. It creates a place where you do more than you need to do in a situation to get rid of it, which could cause legal issues. So hopefully everybody's on board with me when I say that. So a jump word. So I have a favorite jump word and it still exists, which I'm happy with. So we don't need any reactions. You're listening. You're not gonna be able to react on the show. But my favorite jump word currently is the word Trump. If I say the word Trump, you all thought something instantly. Your brain went from a conscious state to a emotional subconscious state because he's just a divisive character. And I don't care where you stand on him. It's just a great example of a jump word. So now I always use the example of, let's pretend you are not a fan of Trump. I don't care where you are. This is an example, okay? If somebody said, and Trump said, and everything after that was the Magna Carta, you would think it's all garbage because the word Trump was in there. Jump words happen in self-defense as well, and you need to be aware of them because jump words are a way to control you. Now, it could be racially, it could be orientation wise, it could be cultural, but there might be a word that pops up that's going to make you overperform, overreact to a situation. Okay. So for me, my jump word used to be the word goof. In Canada, goof means you did bad things to children and ended up in jail for it. I was aware of that. Not that I've been to jail. I'm not trying to sound cooler than I am. Not that that's cool, but I've never been to jail, harder than I am, I guess. But when someone would call me a goof, that would make me fight them instantaneously. And it almost became, it became so well known that if you wanted to pick a fight with Randy, which was a common occurrence when I was bouncing, then you would use that word. I realized too late, not too late, longer than it should have took, that this word was controlling me. So I decided to condition myself against it. So I am a heterosexual cis white male. So I enjoy females. So what I did was I took all of the prettiest waitresses in the bar, which they were all very attractive at the time, and I said they should randomly call me a goof because I would never bro down on a lady. I would, there would be no purpose for it, right? So I use that to inoculate myself to keep control. Does that make sense?
Totally.
In your training, you need to be aware of these words. Now, training it gets dicey. If you want to train jump words out of people, you got to be really clear with the rules and the transparency and how it's going to work. Because I've made some mistakes while doing this. But it came down to, because I used to run a security company as well. We did events all around the province. And we had a guy use an N-word on a black member of our group. 5 years before he trained me, he would have fought the guy instantaneously. We then used it as a way to calm down. Now, I'm not saying you should let people call you bad things, but I don't want you to overperform in those situations. So you need to be aware of jump words, far more aware in social situations than in physical situations. But be aware that there might be a word or a term that is going to hijack your thought process and maybe make you react in a way you didn't want to react. And this is so crucial to self-defense. If you're learning how to de-escalate, but there's a word that will escalate you, then you can't de-escalate effectively. You can't, you need to de-escalate yourself first before others. If there's a hook or a word that will raise you up, you might end up in a situation you didn't want to end up in. And that's all of this. And I say this with all training, everything needs to be on purpose. So I'm very lucky. I travel and teach people all around the world. And I do teach physical skills. And we had a guy who I was training and he's like, oh, I just always do that. I'm like, okay, so always is bad because everything you do needs to be on purpose. So if you can't break that habit, whether it's verbal or physical, then that's a liability to you. If you've trained yourself, if somebody touches your shoulder, all you can do is hip throw them and slam them in the ground and you can't scale that up and down, then you might accidentally drop your partner on their head when they try to scare you one day. That's not good. So whether verbally or physically, everything needs to be on purpose. And that's ideally the goal.
Perfect. Very good. And by the way, we call them short eyes down here in the States.
I love that. You told me that. Like, that's short eye. That's hilarious. I've never heard
prison slang. They call them short eyes. And that's not cool. Very good take, Randy. And hey, a lot of fights start out that way. You effing pussy. Come on. You know, you got to learn how to just laugh it off. When you said the word Trump, I just smiled because I'm like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah.
And I'm a registered independent just for common sense. I'm not a Republican or Democrat in the United States. I left the Republican Party probably close to 20 years ago. I'm an independent because I think both sides frankly suck and they're all bought off and paid for, but this is not a political show. So having said that, I just want common sense. So I just go right down the middle, you know, and if you want to do that, fine. You want to do that, fine. Just don't let it affect me. But you're right. When you say that one word, Trump, people freaking, it's funny. So when you say that word, I just smile. I smiled when you said that.
Yeah.
I was just laughing inside because here we go.
Yeah, exactly. Here we go. Exactly.
Oh. Yeah. Exactly. So, and you know what? Like you said, so certain keywords, you should just smile and go, yep, okay, here it is. And this is how we're going to handle it. And here's how we're going to de-escalate it. You know, and like you said, the native tribes, I teach people, look, it's the totem pole thing. So it's, you got to classify things. And at the very bottom of the totem pole is you're going to get a physical confrontation.
Right.
That's the last thing you want to do. Absolutely. Because nowadays, what are people doing? They're filming you with their cell phone.
Yep.
They want to show that on their Instagram or TikTok or whatever and get tons of likes and attention off of someone else's misery or bad day. And you're being posted. Next thing you know, you're getting called by the police. And next thing you know, you're in court or you may be getting arrested for beating the crap out of somebody. And now you got a whole host of issues that you're dealing with and much worse than when you should have just bit that word that teed you off, de-escalated, walked away for another day. So
I agree.
That's what it is. So you're doing a great job, Randy. Thank you so much, bro, for spending your time. I know you're a busy guy. I really appreciate you spending the time today on the podcast. So I know you light up like a Christmas tree on the internet, but for those that want to check you out and see what's going on, how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm super easy to find. So Randy King Self-Defense, Google, that'll get you all of my stuff. But the place I spend most of my time is Instagram and TikTok. So Instagram, I'm at Randy King Live. TikTok, I am at Defense Talks with Dad. My daughter runs that channel and asks me self-defense questions, and we have little conversations. So that's going really well. So those are the two places we're spending most of our time. If you want more long-form material from me, because obviously Instagram and TikTok are short-form, we have the YouTube channel is not that. There's only the podcast on it, which was The Devil's Advocate, which is over now. And I also do courses. So if you want that, just message me on one of the socials and I'll give you the link to that. But at Randy King
cool.
or TikTok, you're going to find me there the most. And that's at Defense Talks with Dad.
Okay. And since your country's still kind of hardcore with COVID, and I'm not picking on anything, just it is what it is. You're able to travel though out and teach if someone needed you down here in the States or elsewhere?
Correct. Yeah. So my seminar calendar is open. We are fully able to travel now. Our COVID, at least I'm in Alberta, which is the Texas of Canada. So we have no restrictions here at all right now. It's over here. It's not over other places. But yes, I'm fully available to tour. My calendar is open. I have a couple of spots left. So if you'd like to bring me down, the way we do it, the courses I'm teaching right now for physical skills are Reality Violence. That's a combo education and physical skills. We're doing realities of boundary setting, realities of communication, and realities of edge weapon. Those are like the ones I'm doing this year. So if any of those sound interesting, you can bring me down. I'm doing COVID recovery pricing. So it's not my normal price that it used to be because I know a lot of gyms have suffered. So we're doing more of a percentage share thing than I've ever done before. So it's on a flat rate. So if you're interested, you can get a hold of me as well.
Perfect. Very cool, Randy. Thanks, brother. I appreciate your time and insight. Appreciate you sharing your story and what you're all about.
Thanks for having me. It was very fun.
Hey, you bet. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Postel's podcast. We hope you gained new insights on managing life through knowledge about real estate, your personal safety, and living the outdoor lifestyle. Join us next time. So please like and subscribe to the Postel's podcast. Stay safe and power up.